Your Business in Space is brought to you by the InterAstra Institute, the global public square for the business of space. Join us at interastra.space.
Kids that age are obsessed with space. It's so easy. I mean, it's cool. Like, all their clothes have, like, rockets on them. It's all neat. And then something happens. They hit a certain age, and it's suddenly like, oh, that's not real. It's like talking about fairies or unicorns. Like, that's all unreal. It's like, why are we lumping space in with the unreal? I'm Maria Varmazis, and you are listening to Your Business in Space. I help space professionals get the information that they need to do their jobs more effectively, help them understand what's going on in the industry and the world around them. When I was a kid, I was a nerd. This was at a time where Star Trek The Next Generation was on TV and Hubble was in the headlines a lot. And I was obsessed with all things space, both on the science fiction realm of things and what was really happening, what Hubble was seeing, along with the repairs to Hubble. And being a nerdy girl at that time was a bit of a lonely thing. I didn't have any friends who were interested in space like I was. And I got made fun of a lot as a kid for being interested in this stuff. So I kind of learned to not share that part of me. And I kept my obsession for space pretty much within just my family. My family knew that I was a big space nerd. But aside from that, I kind of repressed it because it was just not cool. And getting made fun of at school is not fun. So that followed me as I grew up. I figured space was not something that I could pursue for a career. I was very interested in astrophysics and astronomy specifically. But I figured, well, if I'm getting made fun of like this as a kid, there's no way I'm going to try and pursue that as a job. So as I was growing up, computer science was becoming the hot new thing. And I was pretty good at math and science. I was doing well in those classes. And I enjoyed coding. I had taught myself to code. And I figured I'll be a computer scientist. That's science. That's sciencey. That's engineering-y. It's not space, but it's adjacent. I'll do that. And I went to engineering school for 2 years to pursue a computer science degree. And 2 years into that, after completing my sophomore year, I came to the very obvious realization, looking back on it, that I was miserable. It was not something I wanted to do for the rest of my life. I was competent at it, but I didn't want to be doing that till the day I retired. So I dropped out of college to try and figure out what the heck I was going to do with my life. And I left an engineering degree behind. And for almost a year, I worked as a college dropout in a publishing house, just trying to do data entry and make some money while I was trying to figure out what the heck to do with my life. And the only thing I could think of after that time was, I really enjoy telling stories. I had been part of the high school newspaper. I had been the editor-in-chief. I really enjoyed chasing stories down. I loved kind of figuring out the narrative and telling people what I had learned. So I decided maybe I'll try to get back into college and pursue a journalism degree. And miraculously, I managed to make that happen. Although every college I applied to but one rejected me at that point. I managed to graduate with a journalism degree, and I was feeling very... when I graduated, I was feeling really despondent. I figured, what the heck is anyone going to do hiring somebody with 2 years of engineering school, dropped out, and a journalism degree at a time when journalism is dying? Nobody's going to want that person. So that was not a great way to start my career. I was pretty down. By a lot of hard work and honestly a lot of luck, I landed a job in the trade press, which is business to business, right? I was covering procurement, which is not what I do now. But I learned how the trade press works. I learned the ins and outs of, you know, meeting a deadline and working with a journalism team for 3 years. That was my first job out of college. And then one of the many economic downturns in the 2000s happened, and I got laid off. My magazine also folded. It was not a great time. And by chance, a cybersecurity company saw my resume and said, "You have computer science experience and journalism experience. That actually would be really useful for us in helping us tell our story in terms of what the heck we do." Because not a lot of people understand cybersecurity. And since you have some computer science knowledge, we assume that you do. And they were right, I did. And so this company hired me. And for 4 years, I worked on their corporate marketing and PR team. And I got to learn the ropes from the inside about corporate storytelling, understanding how to translate a very technical topic like cybersecurity, encryption, you name it, these very, very heavy technological fields, and translating that into language that people who aren't technically gifted, I suppose, or sort of don't have that insider knowledge, helping them understand it. That I found to be an extremely valuable skill set, and I've leaned into that in my career. So I continued working in cybersecurity companies for quite some time, all the while loving space, following space, but not telling anybody about that. I figured, like, I don't know about any space jobs. I don't know anyone in the space industry. How would I know? So I just continued with my cybersecurity stuff, which was a great career. I really enjoyed it. And about 7 years ago, I decided to take a hard left turn in my career. And I said, you know, I've done a lot of work for corporations. I want to see if I can work for myself for some time. And I also wanted to develop my art career. I'm also an illustrator. This is something I also do. And on a whim, I applied to attend a NASA event. Because again, I'm a space geek at heart. I really wanted to be part of what's going on in space, but I didn't know, I didn't have an inroad. And I applied to a NASA event to attend as an illustrator. And this was the first images from the James Webb Space Telescope. And this was a very competitive event. A lot of people wanted to go. And for some reason, NASA said I could go. They chose me. I couldn't believe it. It was like an amazing break. And I went to this event. I met all sorts of other science communicators, technology communicators at this event, many of whom had tons of followers and like very well-known people. And I got to meet them and spend a lot of time with them over a couple of days. And I think being in that space, recognizing I knew a lot more about space than I realized, and that my skill set from cybersecurity and communications in general, that could apply in all sorts of ways. Like that experience is not an or, it's an and. It's something that I could transfer quite easily to the space world. And it just so happens around that time, I didn't know this, but I was being scouted essentially by my current employer. They were thinking of starting a space podcast, but they didn't know who could be a host. And at that time, I was doing a lot of cybersecurity podcast work. But they thought, well, Maria's not interested in space. She's never indicated publicly that she's interested in this kind of thing. So she'd be nice, but it's too bad she's not interested in space. And around that time, they saw me tweeting like, hey, I'm at NASA right now. I'm at the James Webb Space Telescope event to see the first images from this incredible, incredible telescope. And it just, the timing just worked out where they said, oh, ends up she actually really is interested in space. So much so that she went to this event and she covered it. And she, you know, she had a great time and she understood what they were talking about. Maybe she would be a good fit for this project that we're thinking of. And the conversation started from there. And I'm now more than a year into the job of being a host of a daily space podcast, which I can't believe it. But if I had told my little geek self back in middle school that she would be doing something space related every day, I don't think she'd believe it. But that is how my life has turned out. And I feel very fortunate. I've been in the professional space world for a little over a year now, maybe a year and a half technically. I still consider myself very much an outsider on that. And I'm okay with that. I feel like that's actually kind of helpful given what I do for a living. My job is to learn. So I want to be in that learner mindset every day. I think for me, a lot of people do have this conception, and I feel like the industry sometimes also doesn't help on this, that you have to have like an aerospace engineering degree, you have to have a master's degree, you have to be really academically pedigreed to get a job in the space industry. And I truly, that was the case for a very, very long time, but that has changed. It is changing now. I think the industry could do a lot more to signal that to people. Not every job requires those levels of academic, that bar to clear. There are a lot of jobs that don't require, you know, having a master's degree or PhD. And people, I think a lot of people self-select out of the space industry because they're so intimidated by that idea. We put up these paragons, these amazing people like astronauts who are just like the best of humanity, right? I mean, of course they are. But not everybody wants to be an astronaut. So what does it look like if you want to be in the space industry, but you don't want to be an astronaut? What is the path there? And we're not really telling people that there are ways in. It's not just for, you know, communication jobs like mine. Like there's legal jobs, there's, you know, compliance jobs, there's procurement jobs, like all sorts of jobs that don't require, you know, being an astronaut wannabe. So I feel like that's one that I still encounter a lot as a space outsider learning more about the inside, who also talks to a lot of people outside of the space bubble. That would probably be the biggest misconception I encounter quite a bit. In terms of the opportunity in the space industry right now, I mean, I think for a lot of people, especially mid-career, we grew up seeing NASA especially, like its budget slashed. And a lot of programs that were really exciting, sort of withering on the vine. Like it didn't die. Like we got to see the ISS and the shuttle program. But I don't know, as a space kid growing up in the 90s, it was really demoralizing seeing how much space was just not a priority. And it was pretty clear with like the state of things that just NASA was really not in a great place, at least for those of us who were space geeks. We were like, oh, we wanted to see something like Apollo level, and we just weren't seeing that happen. So I think a lot of us who were interested in space, who are now in our 40s and 50s, kind of gave up on that being a viable option. But I want to implore those people to take another look at what's going on, because space is not just NASA anymore. Space, of course, involves NASA, but the private industry is doing so much incredible work. And there are so many opportunities there that, I mean, I don't think people even realize are part of it. There's so much money going into private space right now. There's so much innovation happening with the intersection of not just what's going on in space, but also what's happening with the data that's coming from space. Even if you're not like a hardware geek, if you're a software geek, there's just reams and reams of data coming from space that people are still trying to figure out how to parse that and find meaningful insight. And it's literally, if you are the type of person who knows how to take that data and make it into something insightful, that it can literally change lives, especially when we're talking about like climate change and resiliency. It's absolutely amazing to see what's happening there. So just the pure amount of satellites in orbit and all that data coming down, somebody's got to figure out what to do with all that data. And there's so much opportunity there. So for me, as like a software person who's now in the space world, if I could go start over again, that's probably where I would go if I was in my 20s. But now I'm older than that. So I would say that would be the opportunity that I would go after. Right now, I'm laser focused on making sure every day we put out a fantastic show full of information for space professionals that is helpful and actionable and interesting in a way that helps them do their job and feel more informed. And, you know, they're going into work every day going, I have an understanding of what's happening in my professional circles, and that'll help me do my job better. So it includes things like covering launches, covering the latest, you know, series funding rounds. We like to have a special focus on what's going on globally. So as much as the United States is doing amazing things and leading in you know, the world of space, there is so much going on globally. It's been absolutely fascinating to see what's going on in the UK and in India. Of course, what's going on in China, too. I think that having a global perspective in the world of space nowadays is so important because it is all becoming very interconnected for the most part. And there is a lot of innovation happening globally. And providing that global perspective to our listeners, I would say, is probably our number one priority. So that's something that we're really focused on and that I feel really passionate about as well. For me personally, ever since I went to the web event in 2022, I've been working on actually a series of paintings, illustrations, and also an ongoing graphic novel about my relationship to space, but also sort of what happens when, you know, a child who dreams of space and sort of loses that as a grown-up, how do you kind of reconnect with that and why does that matter? It's very personal. That's sort of the nature of the work that I do. But forming those narratives around space and, you know, it's sort of romantic ideal, especially for little children. And what happens as we grow up that it sort of gets thrown away for a lot of people as sort of a flight of fancy and not a real viable thing? I'm really interested in exploring that because I see that every day. I have a six-year-old. Kids that age are obsessed with space. It's so easy. I mean, it's cool. Like all their clothes have like rockets on them. It's all neat. And then something happens. They hit a certain age and it's suddenly like, oh, that's not real. It's like talking about fairies or unicorns. Like that's all unreal. It's like, why are we lumping space in with the unreal? It's very real. So what's going on there? So I'm really interested in exploring that, not just for my kid, but also just on the narrative and sort of exploring that artistically. So that's my world right now. I'm Maria Varmazis. You've been listening to Your Business in Space. You can hear me every day on T-Minus Space Daily, which you can find in your favorite podcast app, also at space.n2k.com. That's our official website. And all the ways to connect with me, including my LinkedIn, are in the links in the show notes. To discover more, head to interastra.space.
Your Business in Space is brought to you by the InterAstra Institute. New episodes are available on Spotify, Apple Music, and most everywhere podcasts are found. To be the first to know when the next episode drops, head over to interastra.space.
This has been an InterAstra Institute and CXS Partners production.